The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This is Ramona Nafee from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading theater and movie reviews to you from around the Triangle region. We'll go ahead and begin with some upcoming theater options, which there really aren't that many of. July 21st is the first one we've got with audio description. That's the Oliver, which we've been discussing. That one's being done by North Carolina Theater, Broadway Series South, and their audio-described performance is on July 21st. However, we do have several offerings coming up from the North Carolina Symphony. Their Summerfest series continues for a couple more weeks. June 30th is Romeo and Juliet, and this one does have that very interesting theater tie-in, all music inspired by Shakespeare with some staged acting. Then they've got through July 1st through 4th, they have a free Summerfest concert in multiple locations for Independence Day, and that one ends up on the 4th in Cary at the Booth Amphitheater, like all the rest of their Summerfest series. And then they wrap it up on July 7th with A Night in Paris. However, the real winner this week is the theater. So we have got, The Muppets. That's going to be coming up with audio description on July 20th at the North Carolina Museum of Art. And then also with audio description, The Tree of Life, coming up in August. However, in Garner, at the Regal White Oak Stadium 14, we have 10 different movies showing with descriptive video. They are showing Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, Brave, Rock of Ages, That's My Boy, and then they're continuing to show Prometheus, Men in Black 3, Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted, Snow White and the Huntsman, and The Avengers. So that's the overview. We'll go very briefly into the theater. As I said, the only one we've got really coming up is kind of a far ways out. So they're doing Oliver at the North Carolina Theater, Broadway Series South. The audio-described performance is going to be Saturday, July 21st. This is the classic musical adaptation. The full run is July 17th through the 22nd, so the audio-described show is that final weekend. And you can find out more online at www.nctheater.com, or you can give them a call. It's 919-831-6941, extension 6944 for the box office. So that's the North Carolina Theater, Broadway Series South. Their website, www.nctheater.com, and 919-831-6941, extension 6944 for the box office. Then next up, we have some of the arts. So this is sort of the lull in the ballet season, though definitely looking forward to that coming back. So what we have now is the North Carolina Symphony's Summerfest series. And these are all open-air concerts Saturday evenings at the Booth Amphitheater in Cary. The next one coming up is on June 30th. The concert starts at 7:30, but I believe that you can arrive at the amphitheater with your picnic, I think at 5 o'clock. So plenty of lead time there to get there early and have a nice picnic. In Romeo and Juliet, you can discover another side of Shakespeare in this concert of the finest musical moments inspired by the bard. Mendelssohn, Tchaikovsky, Prokofiev, and Dvorak are paired with Bernstein's Overture to West Side Story, and delightful performances of famous Shakespeare scenes performed by actors Katya Hill, David McClutchie, John Moses, and Estes Tarver. As with all the other Summerfest concerts, a Picnic of the Week contest precedes the concert. The roving judge will select the best picnic spread 30 minutes before the concert. The top three spreads win a gift certificate to Whole Foods. And then for the Independence Week, they are doing free Summerfest concerts in multiple locations. Join us for a good old-fashioned salute to the red, white, and blue. Hear patriotic favorites and high-spirited classics. The dozen different selections is a pretty big list. As we honor the USA on its birthday, come early and grab the best view of one of the area's biggest 4th of July fireworks. Now, this is showing at multiple locations through the week. On July 1st, they will be performing in Fayetteville. July 2nd, they'll be in Wilmington. July 3rd, in Garner. And then July 4th, they're coming back to Cary, and they'll be in the Booth Amphitheater. So we'll get to see a very well-rehearsed performance for that one. And then July 7th, again, concert starting at 7:30. A Night in Paris. The symphony whisks you away to the city of love in a Summerfest finale to remember. Enjoy the music of Django Reinhardt, Edith Piaf, Michael Legrand, Charles Dumont, and other Parisian favorites. Also in store, Gershwin's rapturous ode to A Night on the Town, An American in Paris. Includes the Picnic of the Week and the Instrument Zoo, which lets kids try out orchestra instruments for themselves. Symphony musicians and staff members provide expert tips as kids bow or blow their first notes on violins, trumpets, trombones, and more. So, well, a lot of different things that they've got at these Summerfest series. So tickets to the North Carolina Symphony performances can be purchased online at www.ncsymphony.org/events, or you can call them 919-733-2750, extension 401. So again, North Carolina Symphony, their webpage for their calendar webpage with ordering information is at www.ncsymphony.org/events, and their phone number is 919-733-2750, extension 401. And that very, very quickly brings us to the movies. But we definitely have a lot of movies to go over. First, this sort of unique opportunity, this offering from the North Carolina Museum of Art and and Arts Access. The North Carolina Museum of Art's outdoor movie series features the best in classic and contemporary cinema, all staged in the beautiful, sculpture-filled museum park. Even the amphitheater is part of a monumental work of art. Films are shown in 35mm on an enormous screen that's built onto the wall of the East Building, close to the Museum Park Theater. And Arts Access is providing audio description for two of these upcoming summer films, The Muppets in July, and then in August, The Tree of Life. You can bring blankets, lawn chairs, picnics. They do have some concessions available, but you can certainly, just like the symphony, come early, set up a picnic, and make a good day of it. If you're a museum member, the movies are free. Otherwise, it's $4 general admission. Now, you can go online and view their entire summer movie series. There are quite a lot of films that they're doing. Their website is ncartmuseum.org. You'd click on Visit and then Summer Season. However, the two that they've got coming up with the audio description from Arts Access are The Muppets and The Tree of Life. So The Muppets is going to be shown Friday, July 20th at 9. This again is the North Carolina Museum of Art's outdoor amphitheater. Kermit, Miss Piggy, and the gang reunite to save the old Muppet Theater from the greedy clutches of an oil tycoon. Jafin Sigal's tender devotion to the lovable gang of Felt pays off big time with a delightful homage to a childhood favorite. Segal and his team are not Jim Henson, but they've done justice to the lovers and the dreamers. And then coming up later in August, The Tree of Life. This one is Saturday, August 18th. And Jack reflects on an idyllic childhood as a disillusioned adult, as space, time, and spirituality merge in Malick's thoughtful masterpiece, a film of vast ambition and deep humility, attempting no less than to encompass all of existence and view it through the prism of a few infinitesimal lives. That was a quote by Roger Ebert. The cinematic achievement of the year, another quote there from the San Francisco Chronicle. So that one still a ways away, but we'll have more on that as it approaches. But for this week, as I said, we have 10 offerings currently showing at Regal White Oak Stadium 14 in Garner. And all of these are with descriptive video. The phone number for the theater is 919-676-3456. Definitely recommend calling ahead to confirm show times. We've got the information here, but this certainly changes day by day, and you would want to verify it. So they are showing Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, Brave, Rock of Ages, and That's My Boy as new offerings. And then from what they've had, some of their carryover films, still with the descriptive video, are Prometheus, Men in Black, Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted, and Snow White and the Huntsman, and The Avengers. So I've got reviews here for the new movies, and then, as time permits, a quick rundown of their repeat offerings. Beginning with Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. While Abraham Lincoln is widely lauded for saving a Union and freeing millions of slaves, his valiant fight against the forces of the undead has remained in the shadows for centuries. That is, until Seth Graham Smith stumbled upon the secret journal of Abraham Lincoln and became the first living person to lay eyes on it in more than 140 years. The review is by Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, is without a doubt the best film we are ever likely to see on the subject, unless there is a sequel, which is unlikely because at the end the Lincolns are on their way to the theater. It's also a more entertaining movie than I remotely expected. Yes, I went expecting to sneer. The story opens with young Abe witnessing the murder of his mother by a vampire. He swears vengeance, and some years later is lucky to be getting drunk while standing at a bar next to Henry Sturgis, who coaches him on vampire killing and explains that it is a high calling requiring great dedication and avoiding distractions like marriage. There's an early scene in which Lincoln tries to shoot a vampire, but that won't work because they're already dead. Then whatever can he do? Well, he tells Henry, I used to be pretty good at rail splitting. This line drew only a few chuckles from the audience because the movie cautiously avoids any attempt to seem funny. Lincoln's weapon of choice becomes an axe with a silver blade, which he learns to spin like a drum major's baton. That he carries this axe with him much of the time may strike some as peculiar. I was reminded uncannily of Buford Pissar, walking tall and carrying a big stick. Against Henry's advice, Lincoln marries Mary Todd, and the story moves quickly to his days in the White House, where he discovers that vampires are fighting on the side of the South. This seems odd, since they should be equal opportunity bloodsuckers, but there you have it. Still with him from his childhood is his friend Will Johnson, a free black man whose mistreatment helped form Lincoln's hatred of slavery. And also still at his side is Joshua Speed, who hired him in his Springfield General Store. Johnson and DeSpeed joined Lincoln in Civil War strategy sessions and are his principal advisors, roles overlooked by history. The film, directed by Tamir Bekmambetov and written by Seth Graham Smith, based on his novel, handles all of these matters with an admirable seriousness, which may be the only way they could possibly work. The performances are earnest and sincere, and even villains like Adam, the American leader of the vampire nation, doesn't snarl or spit over much. Although we do not attend Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, in search of a history lesson, there's one glitch I cannot overlook. In the first day of fighting at Gettysburg, the Union sustains a defeat so crushing that Lincoln is tempted to surrender. This is because the Confederate troops, all vampires, are invulnerable to lead bullets, cannon fire, and steel blades, and have an alarming way of disappearing and rematerializing. Over breakfast, Lincoln confides his despair to his wife and says conventional weapons are of no more use against them than, why, than this fork. As he stares at it, he realizes it is silver, and vampires can be killed with silver weapons, as he has proved with his axe twirling. Now, try not to focus too much on the timeline. After his realization, Lincoln mobilizes all resources to gather wagon loads of silver in Washington, smelt it, and manufacture silver bayonets, bullets, and cannonballs. Then we see him, Johnson, and DeSpeed on board a weapons train en route to Gettysburg. It is night again, so apparently all this took less than a day. Never mind. What comes now is a genuinely thrilling action sequence in which the vampires battle with Lincoln and his friends on top of the speeding train, which hurtles towards a high wooden bridge that has been set alight by the sinister Varduma. This sequence is preposterous, and yet exciting, using skillful editing and special effects. Somehow, Benjamin Walker and his co-stars here are even convincing. Well, as convincing as such goofiness could possibly be. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, has nothing useful to observe about Abraham Lincoln, slavery, the Civil War, or much of anything else. Blink and you might miss the detail that Harriet Tubman's Underground Railway essentially won the war for the North. But the film doesn't promise insights on such subjects. What it achieves is a surprisingly good job of doing justice to its title, and treating Lincoln with as much gravity as we can expect under the circumstances. Next, Abraham Lincoln is showing at 5:15 and 10:10, so just a couple of times there. Next up is Brave. And this review is by Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post. Few movies have been as hotly anticipated this year as Brave, which, as the first Pixar movie to revolve around a female heroine, counts as the computer-animated Hunger Games of the toddler, tiny, and tween sets. In fact, Merida, the flame-tressed Scottish princess at the heart of this She-Ro's quest, bears more than little resemblance to Hunger Games protagonist Katniss, right down to the bow and arrow she wields with eagle-eyed finesse. Declaring early in Brave that she will be nobody's queen but her own, Merida is completely on trend within a spate of revisionist fairy tales in which princesses are expected to cast off prim passivity and assess the hidden warrior queen within. Her parents may be grooming her for imminent betrothal, but Merida sees her wedding as nothing more than the day I become my mother, an idea she derides by veritably spitting out the last word. After dispatching her suitors at an archery competition, handsomely staged and animated, Merida embarks on an adventure that pivots not around the search for true love, but the fractured relationship with her mom. An anti-Freudian twist that gives Brave a novel psychological frisson. As refreshing as it is to see family dynamics rather than romance define the fulcrum of the story, the tale that unfolds isn't the most sophisticated of the Pixar canon. The conflicts, magic spells, chase sequences, and reconciliations feel strangely by the book for a studio so well known for throwing the book out entirely. Once more, once those spells have done their work, resulting in Merida's mother being turned into a huge, hulking bear, the most easily frightened young filmgoers may find themselves terrified of the fangs, claws, growls, and vicious animal fights that ensue. But youngsters with a taste for adventure will no doubt overlook the movie's workmanlike outlines and applaud its spirited, self-reliant heroine, who proves to be as appealingly unruly as her tumble of tightened curls. From a story standpoint, Brave may be nothing special, and Pixar fans might find themselves wishing Andrews had found ways to weave the Highlands' mysticism and medieval atmosphere more richly throughout the film's visuals. But Brave is attractive enough to be a worthy summer diversion, an accomplishment Merida herself would no doubt dismiss as hopelessly shallow, but which makes for a pleasant viewing experience nonetheless. And this one is showing it several times, 1 o'clock, 1:30, 3:30, 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 9:30. So plenty of opportunities to go take the family to that one. And then our next new movie is That's My Boy. This review is by Owen Gleiberman of Entertainment Weekly. For Adam Sandler, movie comedy is rock and roll, not just a way to make people laugh, but a way to strike a pose of scruffy defiance. At 45, he's still playing overgrown boy men, but his characters these days aren't just emotionally stunted basket cases. They're jerks and rubes and loutish vulgarians, the more hideously unrepresentable the better. They're characters who almost dare reviewers to say, "That's stupid and obnoxious." And if you do, you've fallen for the bait. You've become like the scolding parents in a 1950s anti-rock screed. Since we've all grown used to seeing Sandler portray these incorrigible idiots, in a sense he has to keep upping the ante. It's his equivalent of playing that power chord just a little bit louder. Watching Sandler in That's My Boy, his latest assault on subtlety, good taste, and other values that a critic like me is supposed to trash the star for dumping on, I can't say that I laughed a lot, though when I did laugh it was big and loud. But on some level I marveled at the conviction that Sandler pours into playing a character like Donnie Berger, a boneheaded, loud-mouthed alcoholic loser from Boston. Wearing his hair in a greasy 80s shag, dressed in vests and jackets that make him look like a runt Bruce Springsteen, Sandler, make no mistake, doesn't phone it in. He delivers every single line with the unspeakably annoying rasp of a rusty nail scraping on your brain pan. He also gives Donnie what you could call a full range of moods: angry, irritated, pushy, nudgy, grasping, wheedling, whining. A real charmer. Just to make sure we know what kind of role model Donnie is, hardly a scene goes by in which he doesn't have a Budweiser in his hand, and the vulgarities, too, spew out of him like beery foam. A lot of actors by now have learned to do a Boston accent, but Sandler gets something else, the blinkered, bellowing high dudgeon of a certain kind of in-your-face proletarian snob whom you can still find hovering in Boston sports bars. He makes Donnie the Joe Sixpack from hell. Now, long ago, Donnie enjoyed a moment of tabloid infamy. Back in 1984, when he was just a teenager in gold chains, he got seduced by his sexpot high school teacher, and when it came out they were sleeping together, the scandal of it all made national headlines. The teacher, sent to prison for statutory rape, even had Donnie's baby, whom Donnie named Han Solo, and, once he turned 18, raised as a single parent. But he was such a dismal father that the son disowned him. He also renamed himself Todd. As an adult, Todd is played by Andy Samberg as a persnickety hedge fund manager about to be married to a stuck-up American princess. And that, of course, is when Donnie comes crashing back into his life. That's My Boy is one of those comedies about a walking irritant, like What About Bob, in which the joke is that the ordinary guy at the center of everything keeps trying to distance himself from the pest who has arrived to ruin his life, but everyone around him adores the pest. The more Donnie disgraces himself, the more he lowers himself, how low, The more he makes the kind of cringeworthy sexual jokes that Andrew Dice Clay would have turned up his nose at, the more that everyone in Todd's circle think he's the life of the party. I only wish it were a fresher party. Donnie wins everyone over, for instance, by reviving, "What's up?" Seriously? That's what Sandler now regards as a mischievous joke? Still, for a while, the lightweight, open-faced Andy Samberg makes for a good squirmer. His Todd is so neurotically nice that he doesn't even experience his own exasperation, even when we can see the steam coming out of his ears. Where Sandler compromises his whole comedy as rock and roll thing is that he's so into making Donnie a big teddy bear inside, a guy who just wants to bond with his son, that the movie starts to lose its edge. It also stretches out far too long. Did it really need to clock in at nearly 2 hours? Donnie takes Todd and his friends out for a bachelor party, and it's on this voyage into the night that Todd loses his inhibitions and starts to get won over to the ways of excess, to the Donnie way. Lots of jokes about strippers and happy endings follow, and Todd gets so unhinged that he barfs all over his fiancée's wedding dress. But the movie was a lot funnier when Donnie and Todd were foils. Of course, never underestimate the importance of guy-on-guy sentimentality to the Adam Sandler universe. It's his way of making his fans feel as if he's high-fiving them, or maybe giving them a group hug. But Sandler, bottom line, is too good at playing louts like Donnie to work this hard getting us to like them. So then is a quick, and that one is playing at 120, 435, and 750. So now a quick overview of the new movies they've got coming, or of the repeat movies. Well, Rock of Ages is the story of small-town girl Sherry and city boy Drew who meet on the Sunset Strip while pursuing their Hollywood dreams. Rock and roll romance told through the heart-pounding hits of Def Leppard, Joan Jett, Journey, Foreigner, Bon Jovi, Night Ranger, and more. And that one is showing at 3:20, 7:35, and 10:15. Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted, is playing at 2, 4:20, 6:40, and 8:55. Prometheus is playing at 2 o'clock, 4:55, and 7:40. Snow White and the Huntsman has four times, 1:30, 4:25, 7:15, and 10 o'clock. Men in Black 3 at 1 o'clock, 4:10, 7:05, and 9:40. And then The Avengers at 1:25, 4:30, and 7:25. And again, you might want to check the theater for confirmation of those show times. Their number, 919-676-3456. And we have run out of time for today's episode of Theater Reviews. Be sure to listen next time. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Ramona Nafee, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. And so long, until next time.